chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest my dab in the middle of it. Rest my dab in the middle. We are. Rest my dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler along with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield. Good evening, George.
Charlotte, how are you doing up there? Okay in Missouri?
Yeah, we're getting some rain. It's a nice fall. Things are doing pretty good.
Oh, that's great. We have just a really fine guest this evening. He's an author and a screenplay writer. He has quite a few talents. And we're going to be discussing a book that he adapted from a screenplay earlier. And it's entitled A Soldier's Son. He was a Vietnam veteran, a decorated hero. He's an award-winning screenplay writer also. And right now, he's just published a book called A Soldier's Son. He had a critically acclaimed memoir entitled A Field of Innocence earlier in his writing career. His articles and essays have appeared in Newsweek, Wall Street Journal, Chicago Tribune, L.A. Times, San Diego Tribune, The Oregonian, and many other publications. A Soldier's Son took first place in the 2006 Filmmakers International Screenwriting Contest, and I believe he adapted that screenplay and wrote this book by the same title. Welcome to our program, Jack Estes.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I tell you, there was a lot more to say about your biography, but I guess we can devote more time to what motivated you to write this book, Jay?
Well, I had retired from commercial real estate, and my wife and I were trying to decide what I was going to do, and she said, "Why don't you take a screenplay?" Writing class, and there's a woman in town who taught the master's program at UCLA, and so she had, you know, a large class that you could take and you know, get your feet wet in writing a screenplay. Well, I enjoyed it so much that I took another class from her, and then I started submitting it, and it won some contests and some money, and we almost had it sold to Hollywood. They were even talking about who was going to play the main character, and they had worked with Tom Berenger before, so they were talking about him. But then, you know, the recession hit, and there was no money available for a large project like that. And so I liked the story so much, I just started writing the novel. And so I've been working on that off and on for, you know, almost 10 years, more like 8 or 9 years. And that's how it started.
Well, this was not only a writing project, but it had, you had to overcome some personal problems also. Describe those to us.
Well, I think everybody at some point in their life, you know, realizes what their life is going to be devoted to or for. And I decided long ago that my mission in life was to honor the American veterans and help heal the pain associated with war. And the way that I could do it was through my writing and also through a charitable nonprofit that we developed called the Fallen Warriors Foundation. And So basically, that's what I do. For instance, the last essay that I had published was on Memorial Day in the Wall Street Journal. And my book, while it is cathartic, all of my writing is cathartic for me. What I'm hoping to do is somehow reach out to people that don't understand what war is, what war trauma is, how it impacts on not only the soldier, but on his family, friends, and the community.
There's a saying that is a very beautiful saying at the top of your Fallen Warriors Foundation page, and that's fallenwarriorsfoundation.com to our listening audience. And I just, this is such a beautiful idea and thought. And it says, blessed is the warrior who hears the whisper of peace in his heart. And I'm thinking that really is part of your whole mission, is it not? Something around that, those ideas?
Oh, yes. And my wife and I created the Fallen Warriors Foundation on a trip that we took to Vietnam back in 1993. We actually took our young children with us, and there was two or three things we really wanted to do. One is we wanted to find a Vietnamese soldier that had helped save my life when, as a Marine, I lived in a small village outside of Da Nang with 10 other Marines, and also that to add some healing. And I credit my wife to this. And what she thought and felt is that I could change my muscle memory if I was to walk back through the village that I used to live in carrying boxes of toys or medicine or books or, you know, that we could donate to the villages or other areas instead of a machine gun. And it was quite cathartic for me. And then in the ensuing years, I led a group of disabled veterans back to Vietnam, and we were able to, through a great deal of planning, get them back to their original point of pain. And they were doing the same thing, carrying medical supplies and things of that nature. And then I also was able to lead a team of doctors and nurses who would tend to the poorest of the poor in remote villages and also in some of the very run-down and dilapidated hospitals. So that's what we did with Fallen Warriors, and, of course, a lot of other things. We're now phasing out of the Fallen Warriors Foundation, and to tell you the truth, our website needs a little updated, but you can go there and see some of the things we've accomplished, and not only, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, but a couple of years ago, and we've got one more project we're going to do and conclude that. So,
what is that project right now? What is that?
What we're going to do, what we used to do is hold retreats for veterans and their loved ones, and they were led by Claude Anshin Thomas, who was a Zen Buddhist monk. And he had actually been on a helicopter as a crew chief and was shot down over Vietnam a couple of times. But now he's a warrior for peace and a Zen Buddhist monk. And he led our silent retreats. And we did 17 of those or 18 of those over the years. And so this retreat is actually only going to be a one-day retreat instead of a four-day retreat. And, well, we're going to have a night of witnessing and remembering. And basically we'll have veterans and family or friends tell a brief story about what it was like for them to be in the war. And that's not only Vietnam, but Desert Storm and the current Iraq war, which is still going on, So that's, it'll be a night of remembrance, and it'll be a spiritual night, and we're hoping to have it inducted by a former chaplain who we're trying to get him to head this up. And so that would probably happen the first of next year.
Well, Colleen O'Callaghan has been by your side and really been backing you up on all this. Isn't that right, your wife?
Oh, yeah. She...
A fine lady.
She's my hero.
Huh?
She's my hero.
What? I mean, I wanted to bring her name up and specifically, talk about her a little bit, because she's really been a good partner for you, hasn't she? A wonderful partner.
Oh, yes. I won't go into how we met, but
well, tell us about that. Come on.
You really want
story?
Tell us.
You really
about
want?
That. Yeah, because we get with these personal glimpses into people's lives mean a lot.
Okay, well, this will take me a few minutes to tell.
That's okay.
So, anyway. I was broke, lived in a one-room apartment with a bathroom down the hall, and that was about 35 years ago. And I was trying to sell real estate.
Right.
And every Sunday I'd look in the newspaper for ads and, you know, people that were for sale by owners. And this one Sunday I ran into an ad. It said, we have $250,000, want to buy an apartment building. Well, I didn't know anybody that ever had that kind of money. And
right.
So I called them up, and an older woman answered the phone and said, what do you have for sale? And I really didn't. So I just told her, I'll check my portfolio. I'm still embarrassed by those.
Right, people. Right. That's the old realtor thing, right? Okay, go ahead.
Make it till you make it. Yeah.
Okay.
And then I'll call you on Monday.
Okay.
So I went to, of course, I didn't have anything for sale. I didn't even know anything about apartment buildings.
Right.
And so I went, talked to my manager, and we just started pulling some stuff out of the multiple listing book. And by the way, most of the apartment buildings are not sold through the multiple listing book. But anyway, so
yeah.
I called the woman back and gave her some addresses that she could drive by. And that's what she wanted to do. And if she liked the location, then she, and the numbers, that she would call me and arrange to look at them. Well, this went on for most of the summer. And she had a building that she wanted, and we met. Of course, I had to park my car around the corner because it was too beat up, and I was embarrassed.
Okay.
And so
okay. Okay. I got it.
I'm waiting in the parking lot, and I'm expecting this woman to drive up in a Mercedes, or a Cadillac or something like that. And she drives up in an old Volkswagen, gets out of the car, introduces herself. And she was just an elegant and a nice woman. And we looked at the apartment. She said she wanted to write an offer. So I went out to her farm, that next evening and met her husband. And we wrote an offer on this building, tried to get it accepted, and went through the summer and nothing happened. I was starting to learn a little bit about apartments,
sure.
But she left for Hawaii for the winter, so she disconnected her phone. Her name was Claire, and I'd call her with the idea that maybe she came home early.
Right.
Okay. And, but finally she did come home, in about, May, she came home, and by then I was ready with apartments to sell her.
Oh, okay. And you've done your homework,
absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, I was so excited. I'd even sold a duplex, so I was really hot.
You know? Okay. Yeah, you really going there. Yeah, okay.
I'm ready. And so I called her up, and she was happy to hear from me, but she said that her husband decided that they don't want apartments, that they want to buy a little office building. Well, of course, I knew nothing about office buildings. My heart sunk.
Okay.
And anyway, throughout the summer, I tried to find something as far as office buildings and learn about the value of them. And and then she left. She was ready to leave again in November. And I just was so disappointed. I felt like all these months that I had worked on and off, that I'd find it. So she says, but look, I have a daughter. And she owns an apartment building in Portland, and she wants to sell it. She lives in Seattle. And by the way, she's single and very beautiful. You know how moms are.
Yeah, the moms always dote on their daughters. Let's face it.
So I started on this journey of trying to meet her daughter so I could sell her apartment building.
Right.
And I'd call up to Seattle, and she was gone. They say, oh, I'm sorry, she's in Europe, and she'll be back, in a couple of weeks. And then I'd call back, and she, what I didn't know at the time is that she was the vice president of the land development company and was highly successful. But every time I called, she was in a different state doing something different relative to developing real estate, and it was very frustrating. Finally, I got her on the phone, and we talked, and she agreed to meet with me, and she flew down from Portland, from Seattle to Portland, which, by the way, I never knew anybody that would fly that short of a distance, and I just, fantasized about this life she must have,
Right.
And so I sat in the lobby of the Benson Hotel, which is very, it was the best hotel in Portland at the time. Big, chandeliers and mahogany and all that. And I had $6. That's all I had.
Okay.
And I figured I'd buy her a cup of coffee and I'd have an orange juice. And I sat there very nervous.
Right.
Because this would be my chance to sell an apartment building.
Right. Okay.
The doors of the elevator opened, and out walks this stunningly beautiful woman in a red dress, and I could barely speak. And
struck. You were struck then. Oh, man.
That was
her, right?
That was... Yes, and that was her, and and her first remarks, other than introducing herself to me, was that my mom said you were very persistent. So,
well, I guess you were.
That's a great story.
Hey, Jack, I guess you were persistent, weren't you?
I got to tell you the last part of this. Look, that was in June.
Yeah.
And she was also a literature major and read the manuscript I was working on called A Field of Innocence, which was my first book.
Okay.
And needless to say, we fell in love over the phone, but we couldn't really say that because we're clients, but anyway, I sold her building I met her in June. I sold her building, in August, and we were married in August. And
man, that's a beautiful love story. You know that? That's very poignant, very beautiful.
Yes, it is.
So what you've done? You went to war as a young man, fighting and so forth, and you came back and you had a few problems and you were working through them. I think your first wife, y'all divorced. And then you got into real estate and you met your second wife, your present wife. And then, somewhere in there, you started writing, wasn't it? This memoir, right? And this helped you come out of those problems, didn't it? You didn't bore us at all. That was a very beautiful story. And what the point I was trying to make before we had trouble there was that you were beginning to write before you met your wife, Colleen, but then she really got into some of your writings and then you fell in love, but you've been able to use this writing to get through a lot of your past problems, haven't you?
Yes, that's helped me a great deal. Well, first of all, I want you to know that I started writing and speaking about veterans issues when I was in college.
Oh, okay.
And I was on the speech team and participated in a couple events, which was persuasive speaking and oratory. And it was always I had Vietnam theme related speeches or speeches about the architectural barriers that the disabled faced, which were much worse, you know, a long time ago than now. But that was that one. And I'll tell you this, and then I won't go any further.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
We got married and had a nice church wedding and reception on the North Fork of the San Yam River and had a little band playing. It was wonderful.
Okay.
The only problem is I got thrown in jail that night for drunk driving.
Really?
Okay. On our way to our honeymoon. And I've never been that was the only drunk driving charge I ever had in my life, so don't think I'm a bad guy. But I got thrown in jail the first year three times. And it was for just stupid stuff and I had PTSD that was undiagnosed and untreated, and my symptoms, you know, were very difficult to deal with.
Okay.
You know, and,
sure.
And she's helped me all these years, you know, and going through counseling and therapy and revealing rather than concealing. And that's what a major issue is with veterans, is they don't reveal their pain, their anguish.
Okay.
And they hold it inside, and then they can blow up or withdraw. And often veterans think that people don't want to hear what happened to them.
Okay.
And they feel terribly guilty, and some of my symptoms were, I had survivor's guilt. I felt bad for being alive.
Okay.
And a lot of veterans feel those things, and it often leads them, in my opinion, to suicidal ideation. And so to combat that, I've had a lot of therapy and a lot of writing and a lot of love. And I think love is what my wife was able to give me that helped change everything.
Well, y'all are an example of that, giving back and helping other people heal now, aren't you?
Well, that's what we've done through all these years, yes.
Right, right. The suicide rate within the VA system is very high, is it not?
And to figure out what that is hard and difficult to do. And then that people are talking about being 20 to 22, veterans or active duty soldiers that take their life every day.
Right, right. Well, we've done programs with Bart Billings, and he does a combat stress conference every year. I think either in L.A. or San Diego area, and we've gotten into some of these subjects on the, in the suicide. But there's guilt, I guess, that many of these soldiers are feeling, much like you experienced from after your combat experiences, right?
Right. It's a guilt for having survived, and it was, you know, after I came home from Vietnam, there was no such term as post-traumatic stress disorder.
Right,
and
right.
It took years. And the problem that exasperated of veterans issues is that the country had no empathy or sympathy. And in fact, at that time, veterans were vilified for their participation in Vietnam, and all the negative movies and articles and things that were written about how awful Vietnam veterans were just added to the emotional trauma they were already experiencing. We've had great advances in treating veterans for post-traumatic stress disorder and all kinds of different ways. And if you like, I can tell you a few examples.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be
better.
Well, I think it was a couple of months ago, it was National PTSD Awareness. And so there's been articles in the major newspapers. One of the things that they were talking about that Navy SEALs had been using is it's an injection. I can't pronounce the name of it right now. I don't have my notes in front of me. But it's an injection in the back of the neck that would give some veterans just immediate kind of healing or sensation and an ability to deal with their issues in a humane, normal sort of way. And I've always been big on talk therapy, and that's big. Meditation has been, just in the last few years, there are a lot of veterans organizations and in general that provide meditation like we were doing in our meditation retreats, you know, 20 years ago. So those are some of the things. We also have a suicide prevention information that's on my website, my author's website, and that is jackestes.com. And there you can also access essays that I've written over the last 30-some years, and information about my first book, A Field of Innocence, and this book, A Soldier's Son.
So, right. We have that website, both websites up on our webpage, so they'll certainly be able to find those very easily. This A Soldier's Son, it's about a relationship of a soldier and the love he has for his son and the conflicts and all this over a period of time. Is this what you were writing there?
Yes. In 1968, Mike Kelly, the protagonist, his helicopter shot over the jungles of Vietnam. His crew is dead, and most of his team is dead, and the enemy is approaching. And Mike makes a life-altering decision at that point. I won't tell you what that is.
Okay.
But so anyway, Mike comes home, and years later he's, you know, an accomplished author and essayist and works for a newspaper, and he has a good life. He's got a wife and a son named Mick and a daughter named Maddie and his wife Claire, and things are going well, but it's 2004 and the war in Iraq has started, and the symptoms that Mike is trying was hiding over these years start to come out again. He's having flashbacks to Vietnam, and so he's having problems with his wife. She wants him to go get some treatment and take medication, and his daughter feels like Mike doesn't love her, and his son is a baseball player, and he's getting tired of Mike pushing him to play baseball. And finally, not to tell you everything, but in a fit of defiance, his son joins the Marine Corps with his best friend and is sent to Iraq. And this drives Mike crazy. And he just decides to become an embedded reporter and travel to Iraq in a desperate attempt to save his son. So that's what the book is about.
Well, that sounds very, very interesting. And, you know, Charlotte Littlefield is a veteran, and I'm also a veteran, you know. I was in the...
There's two books you guys could buy.
Yeah, that's right. And so we've got a veteran background, and then this psychotropic drug problem, though, we've gotten into that. Have you touched on that in any of your interactions with the VA and these groups?
Well, to tell you the truth, no, I haven't, because that was never a problem with me.
Right.
But it was a big problem with a friend of mine.
Okay.
We were in Vietnam together. He's on the cover of my book, not a soldier's son, but A Field of Innocence. And when that picture was taken, the next day he was shot four times and was later awarded the Navy Cross. But because of his injuries, they gave him all kinds of psychotropic drugs, and we went to see him one time, and he was so bad he could hardly speak because he was so heavily medicated.
Right.
And but now he's better. But that's what the VA will do. They'll just ply you with drugs, and you know, eventually that's not going to work. What works for one veteran may not work for the other. And we've tried all kinds of different things that have been helpful for me. Indian sweat lodges were a wonderful way. And we had a group of Vietnam veterans, and my wife designed this, set it all up, and we did a sweat lodge. And it was really powerful to sit in there in the semi-darkness, the glow of the fire, and it's so hot. It's hot like Vietnam. And we're sweating, and all, you know, almost every one of these guys had been wounded, and their shirts are off, and you can see the bullet holes in their chest.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And it was a very powerful image.
It sounds like it.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that my book, A Soldier's Son, is helpful. And for the listeners out there, you can get it through Ingram Sparks. For the small bookstores, that's probably the best way to buy it, or Amazon, or on Kindle.
Okay. We'll put up those other listings. You have to email those to me. So it's on Amazon,
okay.
But it's on these other publishing sites too, which I don't have up, but I have the Amazon click off up there. But yeah, email me that other stuff. You said in your Vietnam experience, that you went back to find a man that had saved your life. Was that a successful? Was that successful?
Well, yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, his name was Hin, and he had a gold front tooth. And one night we were hit, and he was very important in helping to keep the Marines and, you know, the Vietnamese that were working with us alive. Some of the Vietnamese, when we got hit, ran. And so there were a few that stayed, fought. And he was just very important to me. And we were sharing the same hole together, you know, that you dig in the ground. And he was... You know, I was asleep, and he was on watch, and a couple of other people. So he was tremendously important. And so we thought we could track him down through a friend of mine who was living in Vietnam at the time and had a lot of contacts. And so he was in the village that I lived in, still existed. So he took a Vietnamese that he knew, and when they went around the villages trying to find him, but Hin was fortunately still living there, but he was afraid that something would happen to him, because they said an American was looking for him.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And, yeah, he was afraid that he could disappear or be in trouble and all that, and and he actually took a knife and cut off his front tooth, the gold cap, and because they were, you know, looking for someone with a gold front tooth. Anyway, to make a long story short, we were able to get together. He put his cap back on his tooth, and he took me back to his house, and it was a very moving moment in my life.
I bet that was.
Wow. I'm very moved by your story, Jack. Not a lot of Vietnam veterans got to go back and do that. We've lost a lot of good men, and I'm sure some women, over the years to post-traumatic stress. And it's very heartfelt, your effort, and I just really appreciate all that you've been doing these past 30 years with your wife to help the veterans, you know. And I'm very grateful that you met her and you've been able to heal, you know, some of your trauma to help others. That's quite the calling, and I just thank you for that, Jack.
Well, thank you. I was laying in the middle of the field, a rice paddy, and my best friend was shot four times lethal, laying next to me. The corpsman that we were trying to rescue was shot again, laying next to us.
Yeah.
Another guy had his foot shot off, and my friend said, "Leave me, go home with my body." And I didn't get hurt, and I haven't said this on radio, but I believe that God saved me for a purpose, and I felt like God was speaking to me in that rice paddy.
Well, I think your work illustrates and is an example of what you were supposed to have done, you know?
Anyway, I appreciate you being on your show and having an opportunity. And hopefully people will get a chance to read my book. And I've had many people comment on my writing as in a way that it's helpful to them. And that's the main purpose.
Yeah. That.
Jack, what were the main symptoms of post-traumatic stress that you seem to manifest?
Well,
like going numb or...
No, survivor's guilt was a big one for me. I never repeated patterns. It's taken me decades to get over this idea that was ingrained in me that you can't repeat patterns when you're in, out in the field. Like you can't walk the same way if you're running a patrol. And when I lived in the villages, we ended up repeating a pattern on where we were staying, and that's when we got hit and got hurt the worst. So, it doesn't make sense, but if I took my grandson to school in the morning, I'd come back a different way. Or if I went to go get groceries, I'd come back a different way. So it doesn't make sense, and I know, but that was that. And I also have, I was always very cautious in Vietnam, and that's what helped keep me alive. And so I've always been very cautious and overly cautious, overly protective of my children and my grandson. And I did all the same things that you hear about when you go out to dinner and you have your back to the wall and, you know, feel uncomfortable in crowds. And I think my biggest problem was in the beginning I was violent and angry. And I also had these thoughts that were horrible, horrible kinds of thoughts. Like, for instance, I was successful in commercial real estate, and sometimes I'd be in a meeting with a bunch of other suits and ties, and they're saying some things that, you know, maybe aren't true or aren't right or whatever, and I'm a normal person would think thinking about taking my 45 and pistol whipping these guys. And
okay.
So I had these bad ideas
and
thoughts. And so that's, you know, that's probably some of the symptoms that I have or had.
Right. Well, it's good that...
Well, there were...
Go ahead, Charlotte.
Oh, I was going to say, I read there were 16,000 single mothers that went over to serve in Iraq and Afghanistan. And knowing what it does to a man, I can't imagine what it's going to, what the lives of some of these women is going to be like. My sister served over there in the Green Zone. She helped, she was on the first wave to help set up in the second Gulf War. In the first Gulf War, my husband went, or as we call it, Desert Storm. And he's the deceased veteran. He's the person in my life that killed himself. He's the father of my children. And post-traumatic stress is a real big problem. Other than avoiding war, I don't know how to. I don't know what the answers are.
First of all, sorry for your loss, and it's a. This is the kind of example that echoes throughout our society, and women are often neglected by society, and it especially is true as far as veterans. There are a lot of women that serve heroically now, in the service, but also the wives of veterans and what their sacrifices are and what they have to deal with is unbelievable. In A Soldier's Son, we get to see and understand what some of the wives have experienced by their husbands, and also by being a mother and having your child go off to war. What do they think? What do they feel? What was their experience? I explore all of that in A Soldier's Son.
You have a... go ahead, Charlie.
Go ahead, George.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, my thought escaped me, George. I'm sorry.
You have a quote out of your book here. And it says something like this. It says, it says, what the hell do these assholes, pardon my French, who are trying to counsel us know? Did they ever see a stack of bodies bloat and blister in the sun?
Well, you know, that's kind of...
It's a feeling.
Yes.
Symptomatic of today's politicians.
Yes.
You know, like... Bill Clinton did everything in the world he could think of to avoid participating in Vietnam. And Bush, you know, got some special treatment and didn't have to serve in combat, although he did serve in the National Guard.
Right.
And that's important. Trump, you know, what did he do to get out of serving in Vietnam, you know, when the draft was on? And here's something that's very interesting. A lot of the men that didn't serve, that chose ways to try to get out of the draft, now feel guilty about that. And, you know, it makes them wonder, what would they have done? What would they have been able to accomplish or react to if they were confronted with a squad of NVA soldiers firing on them?
Right. Or
what would it be like to live under an artillery barrage? Those are some of the things that men who did not serve think about. I'm not saying everybody does. There are some people who just think that they were totally right, that the war was awful. But at the same point, they question whether they could have served. And I think that's an interesting.
Right.
It is interesting. Yeah. I feel that we are a war-torn society who's in denial. We've had constant war my whole lifetime. If it wasn't a military war, it was a military excursion of some sort. You know, I mean, we've been dropping bombs and rearranging borders for quite a while. And
right.
It's bothersome for me as an American to know that, you know, as a veteran, I'm very proud or whatever. But at the other hand, as an American, I'm very concerned about the course of this country. And it's the way we warmonger, the leadership does. The way the leadership warmongers frightens me. Because
right.
I don't think
right.
there are global solutions. I'm not saying there aren't problems, you know, that don't need to be contended with. It just seems like our economy, people have said over the decades, you know, is a war-based economy. We've got some of the best manufacturing of weapons and, you know, everything down in our south and probably other parts of the country. I'm only familiar with the manufacturing in the south, but we got our nuclear arsenal that nobody even talks about anymore. You know, there is no who's. It's as a collective country, we're going to have to at some point decide to live with the way things are, I think.
Well, you know, society is changing, you know, so dramatically. And, I mean, just in our lifetimes, we're seeing so much change. It's really hard to keep up with, especially when you've got a 67-year-old brain like mine is. By the way, just to tell you, it's my birthday today. I'm 67
well,
years
happy
old.
Birthday,
well,
Jack.
Happy birthday, Jack. Okay.
Holding steady at 27, huh? I'm holding steady at 30
party
myself.
Tonight.
Oh.
So
that's a good time.
Anyway, it sounds like both of you have represented veterans and their families very well, and I thank you for your service.
And you.
We're both vets, and we care about the vets, and we're upset by the way that vets have been treated, and so we're out there to try to help a little bit on that.
By the way, we're taping this.
Sure.
Know what your listenership is?
Well, it's in the thousands, probably 30 or 40,000 people Saturday mm-hmm. night here in Austin. We've been on the air nearly 10 years, okay? And every day when I'm out in the public, people come up to me and they don't even know and talk about programs and, you know, what they give their impressions or their opinions sometimes. But we've covered these subjects and very controversial subjects also. And I remember one 9/11 conference one time in New York, and Charlotte she got on a plane and had to lay down across two or three seats to get up there because of, you know, a problem, physical problem. And then we found her a room that she could sleep up there in and laying on her back because she had this back problem and sacrum thing. And so Charlotte is quite a trooper. She'll get with the program whether she's completely well or not. And I just love the heck out of her.
Oh,
like a daughter,
thank you, George.
I love her like a daughter. And
yeah.
So we've been out there on the front lines, you could say, of the Patriot movement. And so we're out here to try to defend the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence. But primarily, we've come up with forgiveness is a primary way to come out of our dilemma.
Well, that's wonderful to hear that from you.
Yeah, our motto on our website is, through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. You know, and we think forgiveness,
Go ahead.
Well, what I'm hoping you do, find the time to read A Soldier's Son, and then send me a little email and tell me what you think.
Okay, we'll do that. My approach, I've written a few books myself, three of them, my last book about this forgiveness thing, and you seem to be your slogan here in The Fallen Warrior is blessed is the warrior who hears the whisper of peace in his heart. You're saying many of the same things. See what I mean? And that's very important.
We're on the same team.
Yeah, we are. Everyone's life experience is different. Our own paths are unique to our own individual lives, and so we're exposed and conditioned and programmed or whatever in a different way, you know. But there are some things called humanitarianism that makes us have goals in common, and I think that's what we're talking about tonight.
And I would say to your audience,
right,
to the veterans, that that's another way of really feeling better about your difficulties, and that's by helping others, helping the disenfranchised, and the disabled. Or, you know, if you're not a veteran, go up to the VA hospital and just sit in the lobby and see the aftermath of war. If I was king, I would have it. Part of the policy of being a soldier is that when you're done after serving in combat, then you're going to get a lifelong pension, no matter if you were physically wounded or not, and free medical care and free education and for the rest of your life. But that would make it much more expensive, and maybe it would be too expensive for us to go into these other foreign countries and create wars. So that's one of my.
That's why Charlotte and I supported Ron Paul. See, and they described him as an isolationist, but he wasn't. He was just saying we shouldn't get entangled in all of these foreign wars. And I think that's a very very common thread through his whole political philosophy. Ron Paul's.
Yes, I'm on board with that
In other words, we've become entangled in too many foreign wars and stuff like that. What did you say, Charlotte?
Oh, I was wondering if Jack had an opinion about the phenomena that was the American sniper, the way the country just really, got behind the pro-war view, frankly.
Right.
And of course, he ended up dying at the hands of another soldier. They suffering from post-traumatic stress. He was shot at the gun range.
Right.
Right. I mean, that was a huge story. But you know, the thing is, the American sniper brought the reality of war, you know, to us in the movie screens and in his book, and he was heroic though, and he was troubled, but not in a real destructive way. He was trying to be helpful, and oftentimes veterans have some difficulties, and the movies that come out and the stories are designed to make the veteran look bad, and this made him look heroic, in my opinion. And then we need more of those kinds of stories.
Right.
It just amazes me.
The thing that bothered me was that. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Jack.
No, go ahead. Finish.
Oh, I was going to say, the thing that bothered me was that a lot of young men and women joined the service because of that movie. And recruiting...
It was recruiting boom then.
Yeah, right. I think we need to come down on the side of peace more than war. You know, if we can, you know. That's where I'm at now. I'm 72 years old, so I'm a little bit older than you. But I'm moving toward that peace and forgiveness and love of worldview versus war. You know what I mean? That's where I'm at.
Yeah.
And
I've got another interview I have to do.
Oh, okay.
So
okay. Well, Jack,
are we good here?
Yeah, Jack Estes.
Oh, yeah.
Plenty. Yeah, thank you, Jack Estes, for being with us. And also your wife that helped create Fallen Warriors Foundation. We thank her for all her hard work also. But thank you very much for being with us this evening.
Yes, and I hope that whoever's listening will have an opportunity to read my book, A Soldier's Son, because I think it can provide healing and at the least understanding of some of the trauma that veterans and their families endure. Thank you very much.
Oh, okay, Jack. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you, Jack.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Good night, Charlotte. Bye-bye.
Good night, George. Love
you. Love you, too. Bye-bye. We want to thank Jack Estes again for being with us this evening. And Charlotte, boy, I'm glad you were able to come on board this evening. You really added a great deal to the program. Charlotte and I interviewed a couple of really fine guests also. Wanted just to add a little bit of the end note here. We have got about 3 minutes here to fill. And we've interviewed Peter R. Bragan, who wrote Medication Madness. He's also an esteemed psychiatrist and MD. He practiced in Washington, D.C. for years, for decades, and then finally retired up in Utica. And then also we interviewed Bart Billings, who was a psychologist in the Army for a number of years and retired as a lieutenant colonel. And both of these men, both Bart Billings, Colonel Billings, and Peter R. Brogan, both were very adamant about and made some very strong statements and with a lot of backup and facts on psychotropic drugs. The Pentagon in about 2005 had started allowing psychotropic drugs to be administered to our combat troops. And they both were of the opinion that those should never be administered to combat troops, period. And both were very adamant and very strong wordy statements about not allowing psychotropic drugs in our VA system. We also talked and touched on the subject of suicide within the VA system. And the psychotropic drugs they felt were contributing to the suicide rate. So, and Bart Billings in particular said, boy, they ought to just do away with the psychotropic drugs out of the VA system totally. So anyway, I wanted to add that to the ending of our program. We have about 3 minutes to fill here. But anyway, we broadcast every Saturday night on 89.1 FM in the Austin, Texas area. We've been on the air nearly 10 years. We will have been on the air 10 years on November 1st of this year. And Charlotte and I have traveled around all over the country. We supported Ron Paul, and we're also doing some live production work in other cities throughout the year. But again, we want to thank you very much for listening. And thesecrettruth.com, also at the top of our page, come in. And there are specials that we'll have, or we'll have programs, specials, and also articles at the top of our page. And I believe I have an article on cronies, communists and cronies, I think it's called. And it's about communism and crony capitalism. Thank you for listening, and good night.